So our first presentation is Privatizing Public Housing in the 21st Century, a health impact assessment of the Rental Assistance Demonstration Project. This will be presented by Lily Farhang. Lily joined Human Impact Partners in 2009 and is one of its two co-directors, guided by her belief that health and equity are products of social, economic, and political forces. Lily works with organizations and agencies to reconceptualize their understanding of health and to take action in non-health domains. As an early practitioner, she has experience in HIA management, research, and community engagement, in building cross-sector collaborations, and in providing training and technical assistance around the country. So welcome, Lily.
That's okay. It doesn't even sound like me when she says it. I'm Lily Farhang. I work at Human Impact Partners, and we're based here in Oakland, California. We're a small nonprofit. We've been doing HIA work since 2006 when we were founded. I worked prior to that at the San Francisco Department of Public Health doing HIA work there, so kind of feel, like it's nice to see people interested in something that you've been doing for a while. So I'm going to present today on an HIA that we completed last year it started in 2011, was completed in 2012, on a federal proposal to a federal pilot proposal around how public housing is funded and maintained. So I have nothing to disclose that's of relevance here. So just the context for this health impact assessment, i.e. why is public housing a public health issue? So there's over 2 million people across the United States that live in federally funded public housing. And I would say since the 1980s, there's been a continual decrease in public housing funding. Alongside that, there's been also less funding for maintenance of those units. And so we've seen an increase in dilapidated and uninhabitable units across the country. While there's been a decrease in funding for maintenance of public housing units, there has been an increase in funding for programs to relocate public housing tenants outside of public housing into the private rental market. Those have been called Hope 6 and Moving to Opportunity. And so kind of in that tradition, the Rental Assistance Demonstration Project was proposed in 2011. It had numerous iterations beforehand called PETRA and RHRA, and I won't bore you with all the acronyms. But it was, sort of the latest attempt in the Hope 6 MTO kind of history to address the chronic funding shortage in public housing. I think just importantly, from a health perspective, there really was no health discussion in legislative debates for RAD or any of its precursor bills. And a number of organizations around the country were interested in incorporating a health lens into the RAD debate, and there was funding available. So just in the HIA parlance, like this sort of information that I'm sharing with you fits into what we call screening. So we basically, based on this information, we decided to move forward to conduct an HIA on RAD. I'm just going to highlight a couple of components of RAD. It was very hard to even figure these out in the 100 pages that comprise the bill. So there is a potential for ownership by nonprofit or for-profit organizations, increased reliance on vouchers, potential for increased and stricter residency standards, and then no guarantee of one-to-one replacement of hard units if demolition of existing public housing took place. So these are some of the components of RAD that were particularly interesting for us and our partners. And so our partners, ourselves, Human Impact Partners, we're a national organization. We partnered with two other national organizations, the Advancement Project and National People's Action. Advancement Project is based in D.C. Their work is around racial justice and trying to sort of take action in education and housing domains. National People's Action is a grassroots community organizing network that has members around the country. They're, sort of hardcore community organizers their interest was their members. Their members are the local organizations that are listed below, and they were sprinkled across the United States because we wanted to make sure that we were getting kind of the voice of residents from around the country. So, you know, in health impact assessment, it's very common to draw something called a pathway diagram where you try to illustrate what the impacts of the proposed policy are on health. So the bottom right diagram is a pathway diagram where we looked at what how changes to public housing ownership and management structures might go on to affect health. So we had many of these pathway diagrams. Ultimately, we narrowed our scope into these three top things. So we narrowed our scope to focus on how RAD might impact the type of management, evictions and resident organizing, housing quality, affordability and stability, and then social cohesion and social capital. So those were like our three broad domains. And then we went on to look at how those three broad domains would affect a series of health determinants and health outcomes. So in terms of the assessment, so HIA, you know, how many folks here, let me just ask, are familiar with the HIA like six-step process? Okay, so that's good. So, you know, some less familiar, some more familiar. There is a defined set of six stages one is supposed to go through when they're conducting an HIA. So I walk through each of these. The first one was screening. We decided to do the HIA. The second was scoping. This is where we scope out what we want to look at. Assessment is the third step where you're actually conducting the research on the things in your scope. So our inputs in our assessment phase were we looked at available data that had been collected and, you know, presented by others around the country. We looked at peer-reviewed empirical research as well as gray literature on public housing and health. We looked very importantly at the evaluation of all of the sort of prior RAD programs, HOPE6, MTO, and GATRO, which actually was the very initial one that took place in the 70s and 80s. And then we did focus groups and surveys with residents across the country in each of those geographies that I highlighted earlier. And so I'm just going to share with you a few of the findings that we came up. And so, you know, the overarching question is how is RAD going to impact these social determinants as categorized by those three domains? And some of the findings that we found from the literature that were relevant to our own, to our HIA, were that we knew public housing budgets had decreased by 48%, while funding for vouchers had increased by 403%, meaning that more and more folks were leaving basically, you know, the public housing market for the private market. And we can talk a little bit about that later on. At the same time, the public housing stock was being increasingly privately managed. So rather than having public housing authorities that were managing the public housing, you were actually having for-profit companies coming in and managing the housing stock. You know, at the same time, the sort of need for public housing was at its highest point really ever, given the economic crisis. And just what I'll say related to that very first item, the first item around folks having to move into the private market is that while you might get a voucher to cover the cost of your rent, there's a number of other factors that make it challenging to move into the private market. You know, people, it's hard to actually find units that accept vouchers, right? Because not a lot of landlords want to make their homes essentially available for use, like for Section 8. It takes sort of more work to make yourself a competitive applicant for those units, right? You have to sort of be used to going in and pitching yourself as someone who would be a good tenant in that unit. And then, of course, the risk of being evicted is far higher because as quickly as someone can make their unit available for Section 8, they can take it off. And they're supposed to sign contracts basically with public housing authorities to make units available for rental to folks that have vouchers, but there's a lot of challenges with maintaining those contracts. And just one thing to highlight is that a lot of our focus group participants, and there were about, I think, 75 across the country, stated that eviction really was the main reason why people were moving out of public housing. So as the public housing stock was increasingly being privately managed by private companies, alongside that came a set of occupancy rules, right? So like stricter standards for residency. And so, and a lot less forgiveness if you messed up. And so the, basically, you know, the accountability mechanisms really changed. And so residents felt like eviction was a far greater threat to them in their public housing. So what, you know, what you do in an HIA is you try basically to describe the impact of the policy on the determinants that you care about, the magnitude of that impact, the severity of that impact. So magnitude is how many people are going to be impacted, severity is how bad is it going to be. You try to describe the strength of the evidence. And I just want to draw folks' attention to a couple things. So overall, we did actually think that RAD would have some positive impacts for health. In particular, bringing in an infusion of private funding would lead to improvements in housing quality, right? So because public housing is so chronically underfunded, getting an infusion of new capital from the private market as they came in to actually manage the units would be good for that stock. So they would actually, you know, their money would go into fixing all these dilapidated units, and there would be associated health benefits with that. So that's, you know, we had to call that out. That's actually a good thing. Another thing is that the evidence really highlighted that basically that crime would improve. And so it's a funky thing, because as evictions would happen for people who were breaking rules living in housing, you might basically see a decrease in crime because some of the more, quote, sort of problem residents would be leaving. So the issue was saying that there might have been an improvement at that hyper-local level of the actual public housing unit, but the question is, where does that crime go? Because you're actually not dealing with the root cause of the crime, you're just essentially displacing it to the larger community. But we felt as it was important to say that for folks actually living in the public housing units, crime would likely decrease. I'll say on the sort of what we thought on the negative side, we did think that the cost of housing would increase for residents if RAD were adopted and implemented, and associated with that you would see a decrease in housing stability. You would also see, with that decrease in housing stability, a negative impact on social networks because people would be leaving their public housing kind of communities where they have relationships built up with other residents over time. So this, you know, I can talk about this more later on, but it's just to kind of show you how we try to summarize all of our findings into one piece of information. I'm actually going to skip that slide. So we, you know, you do all this research in an HIA, it goes into a report, and oftentimes no one really reads it. So what we try to do in our HIAs is to try and it's probably the primary reason why we partner often with community organizations that have organizing campaigns that our HIAs are trying to feed into, because we don't necessarily want to do our HIA kind of by itself. We feel like it's important to partner with groups who are actually working on the issue that we care about, because their capacity to actually get the recommendations that you make in your HIA adopted are much higher. So we did do an HIA report. There were a summary of findings. More importantly, I think, there were numerous meetings with HUD officials and with legislators about the findings in our HIA, and there was a media campaign in local markets, basically, that were targeted to local public housing authorities. I think one thing that's never happened before is we had dueling op-eds with HUD in Politico and in Huffington Post. Our partners wrote, I would say, kind of a scathing critique of HUD that we actually weren't authors of because we weren't totally on board with it. They published it in Politico, really being critical of HUD and RAD, and then HUD management, understandably, they published an op-ed back saying why HIA was not great. So this was something that had never really happened before. We thought it was really interesting. It was a good learning experience for us. I think I just want to highlight the roles that different partners played in the HIA. So Advancement Project and National People's Action, they were co-authors on the HIA. They helped us develop our research questions, the recommendations. More importantly, I think they communicated findings because their power to do that and their track record and being able to do that was a lot greater than ours, because we're, I think, more of a traditional sort of research organization. And then the grassroots groups that had members, they really they helped coordinate basically getting the voice of local public housing residents into the HIA. So what were some of the impacts, right? So this is sort of is this my last slide? Yeah. So I'll just spend 2 minutes on this, or 1 minute on this. So one thing is that the HIA was finished in early 2012. The bill was actually passed in 2011. So Congress said yes to RAD as a pilot proposal. But it left the implementation guidelines to HUD to create, right? So what we were able to do wasn't necessarily to influence the passage of the bill, which we actually didn't care as much about the passage of the bill. We cared a lot more about how the regulations were written by the agency. So, you know, after reviewing the so there were a number of meetings with HUD to basically express the recommendations in the HIA. I think after reviewing the final regulations, it appears that the HIA and the organizing that our partners did influenced several components, particularly related to resident requirements, like resident occupancy requirements and tenant organizing. Of course, it's impossible for us to say that us doing the HIA is what caused that. It's very possible that they would have come to that on their own, but it's encouraging at least for us to see that what we would recommend is aligned with what would be in the regulations. In terms of process impacts, this was the first HIA of a federal housing policy bill. I think it really did elevate the discussion of health in a policy debate that doesn't typically include health. You could see that basically by the Politico and HuffPo op-eds. And health was, it was a core talking point for a lot of our organizing partners who often actually don't talk about health. So I think it was a new tool and perspective for them. And we appreciated their openness to trying to, I think about how they do their organizing around housing a little bit differently. And I think that we can see the benefit of that to them in the sense that they're now considering other topics to do HIAs on. So that's it. I just want to give a shout out to my co-authors who are not here, but without them it would have been impossible to do the HIA. So thank you so much.